This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Second hour here of this live Saturday show. The
number two.
If you want to join us here, 603-283-6160.
I just like saying number two.
That's 603-283-6160. It's Ian.
And the Reverend Captain Kickass.
Bring up anything you want to discuss. We were getting into the very beginning of a story that you had, Peakless, about New Hampshire leading the rest of the country as far as parents getting their kids the hell out of the government indoctrination system. Government schools. And
round of applause, everybody. Round of
call
applause.
Them what they are. They're not public schools. They're government schools. They're there to indoctrinate your children into the government, the pro-government belief systems, the statist, if you will, belief systems.
Like whatever I think the definition of school is, certainly does not apply to the government, this government institution.
Yeah. I mean, none of the things that we tend to believe, I mean, not we, but Americans tend to believe about their government, would ever have passed the slightest sniff test if they hadn't gotten us over a decade of indoctrination to, they work for you. Yeah, public servants. I mean,
we are the government.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
all the lies.
Your basic five senses will tell you that none of that is ever occurring. Mm-hmm. But if they keep telling it to you and keep telling it to you, especially when you are, you know, young and sort of trying to learn what the world is about, well, then it just gets sort of hardwired in foundational levels of your mind.
Yeah, don't forget the everyday forced Pledge of Allegiance, indoctrination pledge as well. Socialist, by the way, written by an actual socialist in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Here's the definition. Noun. A word school. Noun. An institution for educating children. Well, that doesn't apply to government schools, so it doesn't even meet the definition.
Well, I mean, they do the bare minimum, right? Like, there's still some value in having people know how to read and do basic math, although it's certainly not...
Of course there's value in all of that, but is that the primary function of this government institution?
No,
it's like less than 1% of what they actually do.
Yeah. Well, 20% of kids end up functionally illiterate, so they're not teaching reading.
One in five graduates of high school are functionally illiterate.
Graduates. They're illiterate, they're innumerate, they're full of nonsense. Now, I will say, they do a great job of schooling. Now, if you think of a school of fish, you have this little glom where all of them move together and no one of them makes any particular decision. Yes, they do that very well. Now, education is not what they do, because to educate is to bring something out.
Right.
There is a doctrine that you are bringing out of them, whereas indoctrination is a doctrine that you are putting into them, and that's exactly what it is.
It's a slave training system.
Mm-hmm. Now, the numbers that you were sharing with us were from 2009, I think, all the way through what year?
Yep, fall of 2009 through fall of 2020.
Okay, so we still don't even have the full numbers from the COVID fallout.
Right.
I mean, there definitely were some people that had left by the fall of 2020, but I'd like to see through the fall of 2021, you know, and maybe see if that takes it from 14% to 16 or 17% or something like that, because there was a significant amount of people that decided, okay, well, we're just not going to send our kids back.
Well, nationwide, that number did drop 2 years in a row. So the COVID year, and then, you know, when COVID started, and then the year after it,
the number of
enrollments in public school dropped for a consecutive year after, you know, COVID was supposedly over.
Right, because people were forced. I mean, this is one of the good things. There weren't a lot of good things about COVID, but this was one of the good sort of outputs, was that people were forced to try something different with their child's education. And they were also able to see for the first time what the government education quality, quote-unquote, actually was.
Yeah, it was a revelatory experience for a lot of parents to see, this is what they do with our kids?
Right, because they were forced to be at home also at the same time that the kids were at home, and so therefore they could, for the first time, because usually you would have to take time off from work and then go and sit in on a class, and you know, most people aren't going to take the time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that isn't a thing that people do, otherwise I would remember from school, this person's parent is sitting in today.
Almost never.
Because, wait, can you do that as a parent? You can go sit in your kid's class?
I would hope
you
so.
You can. You have to sort of go through a rigmarole and fill out a form
or something to get a license.
Get a pat down, go through the metal detector.
Well, and a lot of this is reminiscent of the same obstructions to transparency that you find in the court system and that you find with the First Amendment the First Amendment auditors. Like, no one wants you taking video of this because then they find out what you've been doing.
Yeah.
And just about everyone who actually, like, takes the time to watch this goes, wait, that is the quality of education.
Karlyn Borsenko, who was, she's a doctor, and she ran for governor here in New Hampshire last time around. We did have her on right before the election, and she had an interesting proposal to this end, which was that if she were put into office, she would support the idea of having a camera installed in every government school classroom.
That would be amazing.
That would be pointed at the blackboard or the whiteboard or whatever. So the purpose wasn't to watch the kids, because that was one of the objections. She goes, you're going to violate the kids' privacy. Well, no, the purpose is to watch what the teacher is doing. Well, you're going to violate the teacher's privacy. Well, they're a government employee, and we should be able to see what they're doing.
Should be 100%
and anyone transparent. Should be able to see it. Not just the parents, but any taxpayer should be able to see those feeds from those government school classrooms. And boy, does she get a lot of pushback from the Teachers Association.
The fact that you can't. That's not already a thing, not only in schools, but in every government institution, should be very revealing to those of you listening who are like, well, but no, the government doesn't want you to have any visibility into what they do and how they do it. They want you blind and uninvolved. That's why this stuff is not transparent already.
The very idea that these people are fighting to have teachers have private time with their kids is deeply disturbing to me. I do not want some unknown adult to have private time with my kids. Right. That's insane. And okay, this is a public school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so not private. The expectation of privacy comes with being in private.
Indeed.
Right.
Yeah. So people are getting their kids out of these schools. You said New Hampshire's at a record 14%.
That's right.
Downturn in enrollment, meaning people are pulling their kids out. Not just that people aren't enrolling them in the first place, but we're specifically talking about they had a certain number, and now they have a few, 14% fewer. Is that correct?
That's right. And Axios reported that, according to the National Center for Education Statistics, enrollment fell by 14%. As I said, between fall of 2009 and fall of 2020, and that 14% rate is projected to continue until 2030, emptying even more classrooms.
It needs to go up. 14%.
Yeah, I agree.
How do we turbocharge that?
It needs to be 14% a year, is what it should be.
Well, no, that's the thing. If it's dropping by 14% it would be nice.
It was 14% over a decade.
Yeah. But even then, it's at least encouraging. And they say that this will continue for the next decade. I think they're mistaken. I think it will increase significantly.
I sure hope so.
Me too.
I mean, it's got to be, to some extent, word of mouth is playing a factor here, where parents are getting their kids out of school. They're taking them into unschooling or homeschooling, or maybe they're sending them to a private school or something like that. So there's all these different options. But then they're going to talk to the other parents. Some parents are going to see them at a party or something like that. They're going to say, hey, how's it going with your kids not going to the government school anymore? And they're going to say, you know what, it's been great, little Johnny. He gets to direct his own learning now. He doesn't have the bullies to deal with at the school. He doesn't have to deal with a lunchroom or whatever, right? Like, there's all these benefits from not going to government school. And you talk to people that have had homeschooling and been doing unschooling for years, and they're huge advocates for it. Mm-hmm. They know what it's like. They know the perks, and they know that their kids really love to do it. I mean, it's rare, I suspect, that you'll get a young person leaving the government school, trying out the independence of unschooling or homeschooling, and then actually wanting to go back
You'll get the opposite of that, where somebody who's homeschooled all their life, they decide at some point, hey, you know what, can I just do public school for a year or something like that? You'll get that. But I think that you're right. If you start out in public school and you pull your kids out, and once those kids do experience that freedom, they never want to go back.
Right. And what I think is really going to drive this in the future is you have to remember that this is a decade over decade thing. So these kids are coming out without having been deeply traumatized continually for a decade. So people are going to interact with people who haven't been deeply traumatized, who haven't been, the thing is, all of this education has a tendency to make you less capable and less capable.
That's what it's designed for.
Right. So they're going to interact with people who haven't had these shackles placed around their ability to educate themselves. So the kids that come out of actually learning and being raised by your own parents are going to be very well-mannered.
That's how you see it.
They're going to be very sociable, and they're going to be extremely capable people. So when
they're
going to
have kids.
Right. They're going to have kids, and how many people are going to go, yeah, well, I mean, all of my managers were homeschooled because they're the only ones that are actually capable of anything.
Yeah, and
maybe I should homeschool my kid.
Right? And here's the thing I was thinking about. They say that children are mimics, right? They mimic whatever their environment is, right? So homeschool children are around more adults, arguably, or at least, you know, people who are older than them, than they are around children their same age.
Right.
Whereas in public school, they're around more children their same age than they are adults. So what are they more likely to mimic? The behaviors of competent adults who, you know, have their crap together, so to speak, and, you know, can have interactions in a polite way, you know, all that kind of thing. Be very, adjusted, socially adjusted, right? Or when they're surrounded by one adult and a whole bunch of kids who are completely not adjusted at all. What is their behavior going to be more like?
Right.
Children.
And if you look at what this trains them for, it's gang behavior.
Yes.
So if you have a bunch of people who haven't been taught to be in a gang, who have just been taught, no, I'm a human being, you're a human being, and we might disagree about things, but we can be civil with one another. When you have a bunch of people who come out that way and it hasn't been destroyed from them, that, I think, is going to be a big spark for people to continue this trend and significantly increase it.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. And then, of course, the whole, what we were discussing in the last hour with the gentleman, Witt, called from Florida, the intentional community building that's happening here with the libertarian community, where, as you pointed out, Peekless, there already are homeschooling groups, there already are you know, these alternatives that people can kind of plug into, and they can create these things that, you know, may or may not already exist. A lot of it does, from what I understand, and I'm not in that community, right? I just hear things, right, from some of these folks. But that makes a big difference, too, bringing people together who value the idea of independence, who value the idea of getting your kids out of government school, and creating those alternatives for parents to be able to just, you know, to have some place to go. A lot of people don't want to start things from scratch.
Right.
They want somebody else to do the groundwork for them, and that's fine. Not everybody's a leader. Not everybody's an entrepreneur. So the more options that we have, the more we're going to have for these people with more people coming here to New Hampshire. And I think that we'll see more educational opportunities.
Well, and even from just a sheer, love for your children. You got kids, and you say that you love them, you'll do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you probably want them to have every possible edge over every other human that you can give them, right?
Right.
Well, the facts already sustain the belief that homeschooled children do better in life post-schooling age than publicly schooled children. So that alone, if you care about your kids, you love your kids, you want them to have the edge, homeschooling alone should be the first thing you do and the thing you give the most sacrifice to make sure that your kids have that edge.
And one of the great things is that not only will the ideas of independence not be beaten out of them through just the browbeating and the shaming that happens, as well as the general brainwashing that happens when you go through public school, not only is that not occurring, But when you are part of a community of homeschooling people, you will get that value of doing things for yourself, of not relying on government to solve all of your problems mm-hmm. for you. So you will grow up, and that will simply be your go-to action, is not to, hey, there ought to be a law, not to go for the government welfare, but to go, okay, what can I do to get this thing accomplished?
Right, how can I solve this problem?
Right. How can I solve this myself? How can I solve this with my community?
Mm-hmm. Were there any other takeaways from this study that you thought were interesting?
Well, so the Axios report comes out just 48 hours after the New Hampshire Department of Education released the latest data on taxpayer spending on K-12 education. Because cities and towns continue to increase their demands for taxpayer funding for schools.
Right, despite the fact that the enrollment is down,
right.
They want more money.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No.
I mean, normally the government schools have an excuse, right? Usually the excuse is, presuming the enrollments stay flat or maybe are going up slightly, usually the excuse is, well, our test scores aren't doing so great, so we need more money to hire more teachers to be able to improve our test scores. Or if the test scores are going up, then it's like, well, we still need more money because we got to keep things status quo. We got to hire more teachers. Got to keep the schools the best. So there's always an excuse to bring more money into the system. But if the numbers are going down of enrollments, what is the excuse? Why do they need more?
That's the excuse right there. Well, obviously, people don't think we're doing a good job. We need more money so we can do a better job.
And attract them back in.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most false beliefs about public schools is that more money equals better education.
And it doesn't.
Does not.
Yeah. Average per pupil spending in New Hampshire has hit a record $19,400.
Wow, man.
Yeah. So think of the education.
Per year?
Yeah. Per year.
Yeah. Per student, per year, $19,400.
I am sorry, but there is no service that, I mean, very few services cost that kind of money. And the idea that education shouldn't be like any other market service, and seeing innovation and seeing costs go down over time instead of doubling and tripling and quadrupling, I mean, it's just insane. People should be able to save money over time by getting better educational options, more efficient alternatives, unique ideas that are being presented to the marketplace. But no, we don't get any of that. We get one-size-fits-all government school where your kids are going to be educated to the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. If they're too smart for the class, well, they're going to be slowed down to keep up with the rest of the class.
Well, and certainly they're not going to be able to pursue what they want to learn, what they're interested in.
Hell no.
And the thing is, the way human beings are built, we don't get to pick what interests us. It hits us out of the blue. But hey, that's what you're interested in, so that's where you're going to have an easy time learning more than other places. Now, I can at least understand why someone would believe that for something like military defense or something like that, well, you have to have this big coordinated thing, so we have to have this very large organization to manage this. But when we're talking about educating your children, every one of them is a completely unique set of interests and abilities, so you need to avoid educating them as a block.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. The homogenization of education is detrimental to the ability for a child to learn.
That's exactly right. In dozens of smaller districts where enrollment has fallen by 20% or more, the per-pupil spending has more than doubled.
God. In the last 10 years.
Surprise!
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. In the Seacoast community of Newcastle, spending per student soared by nearly 300% over the past decade to nearly $45,000.
Yikes.
Wow. And if I recall correctly, in the Croydon situation, where listeners may not be familiar, a Free Stater, Ian Underwood, went to the town meeting, and he had printed up some flyers that showed... Now, I've not actually seen the flyer. I've just heard him talk about it. He was on our show. But he printed up flyers that showed, like, the test scores over decades and the spending over decades. And you can see clearly that you don't get better test scores by spending two times, three times, four times, five times as much. It does not translate. So with that information given to the people at the town meeting, he managed to convince the people at the town meeting to reduce the school budget by 50%,
yep.
Meaning taking it from $20,000 roughly per student to $10,000, which, as he pointed out, was still more than what the private schools in the area were charging for education. So there, it's not a huge cut if you look at it from that perspective, right. And it would have taken it back to like 1995 levels of spending, which was still more than the private schools. And so he passed, he got that passed, but then what happened was, and Peklos sort of referenced this earlier in the show, what happened was there was this big outcry,
yeah,
from the statists who felt like they had gotten taken by surprise. This darn Free Stater went in there.
He ambushed us with pamphlets and charts.
Yeah, and we didn't know what he was going to do, and now we're going to fight. And they found some loophole in the law that allowed them to redo, essentially, or undo the vote if they could get 50% of the voters in the town to show up to this undo vote, then they would be able to undo it. And unfortunately, they went literally door to door in a desperate attempt, telling lies, of course, about what had happened to persuade people to do this. And they were successful.
It occurs to me that if I was just kind of looking up to, if the average cost per student is $20,000, right thereabouts, to put them
in New Hampshire,
that's only 10 grand a year away from the average cost of a prisoner in the United States,
yeah,
prison system.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, the prisoner has to be there 24 hours a day.
Oh, that's true. So that, yeah, might actually be more expensive to, because
mm-hmm, they're there for what, 8 hours a day or something like that. The students
thereabouts, yeah, seven-ish, right?
Now, I'm real curious though. How many people were paid to go door to door?
Good question.
All these people,
right?
Because seems to me that they have this massive Democratic Party.
Sure do.
None of these real people well that if you can't indoctrinate them as children,
right,
they will reject socialism.
Mm-hmm. None of the
and
people.
That's their whole bag.
None of the people who showed up for the redo vote showed up for the original vote.
Well, that's because they were told to stay home. The supporters of the reduction were told, and maybe wrongfully so, were told by the supporters that if we don't show up, then the vote, they didn't think that there were going to be enough of the people who wanted to undo the reduction in the budget, that they would, that there would be enough of them to trigger the vote being legitimate. So they had to have over half of the town's population show up to the vote.
But either way, the original vote occurred. Right? And then a big stink was made about it, and then a bunch of people showed up to undo it.
Correct.
And I realize that maybe not the same amount of people who were there for the first one showed up. But what I'm saying is far more people showed up to the second one to undo it than showed up for the first
one. That's correct.
If that was their opinion, and if they were so politically involved,
they
showed up
back
for the first one.
They were resting on their laurels. They
That's
got caught by surprise.
They were lazy, and they didn't act until somebody pitched a Karen.
Yeah, well, they didn't think they had to act. They figured they had it in the bag. They had total control. They were never going to have any real competition to try to undo what they were doing. And then the fact is, they were caught by surprise. And I bet you're going to show up more heavily this time around at the town meeting this year.
Hindsight's always 20/20. So next time, if we manage something like this, have everyone show up and just don't go into the meeting until you're sure that they have enough numbers.
We just got to have more people here. We need thousands more liberty-minded people here. There just aren't enough migrants to make enough of a difference right now. But there's more coming. There's more moving here. Record numbers every year in recent years. This is Free Talk Live.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
U.S. USA News Update. The White House says additional documents with classified markings were found in President Biden's Delaware home this week. White House lawyer Richard Sauber said he discovered the newest documents in a box initially found by the president's personal attorneys on Wednesday. Sauber noted that all of the pages were turned over to the Justice Department. So what would you do if you had the winning billion-dollar ticket from Mega Millions drawing last night?
I would retire.
I can't even fathom how to even spend that kind of money.
Well, somebody did win. The lottery tickets sold in Maine matched all six numbers, worth over $1.3 billion. The CDC and FDA are looking into concerns that the Pfizer COVID vaccine causes strokes in those 65 and older. The CDC notes that overall the data suggests it's very unlikely. Dave Collins, USA News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join us here at the number 603-283-6160, especially if you want to talk about getting your kids out of the government indoctrination camps.
Get them out! Use those children!
Children day prisons, which are what the government schools are.
I sadly know somebody that, you know, tried to do the homeschooling thing and then put their kids back into public school. Because there's a dude, we just couldn't do it. It wasn't for us. We're not teachers. We're not, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be critical of my friends, but, like, they're not freedom-minded people. Right?
These are,
you know. And it was just, like, they were used to having their kid in public school.
Sure.
And so it was just easier
have someone
for
else take care of it.
Yeah.
Trust us. We're the government.
Yeah, it kind of goes on and gets a little more political from there. Those darn Republicans! But one thing that it does mention that I think is really crucial just as a point of reference is, so there's this huge stink about these education freedom accounts.
This is a thing here in New Hampshire, and I believe a few other states have something similar now as well. Can you describe what an education freedom account is?
So education freedom account is money that you can use for homeschooling, for parochial schools, or for private schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anything other than public schools.
Right.
Now, the education freedom account is $5,000.
It's not 20?
It's, like, it's not 20. Nothing.
Why is it 20?
It's not even 10.
Why is it 25% of the total?
Good question. But they make an enormous stink about, like, oh, you can't do this.
They're suing, actually, I believe, over it. I think the teachers' union is suing over these things.
Yeah.
They're suing because people are using... This is my understanding of the case, right? I have not read their filing or whatever. But they're suing because some people are using the money to send their kids to a religious school. And they're saying, you can't take tax dollars and send it to a religious school. And that's kind of where they're coming from on that.
Yeah, you can, actually.
Well, let's go into the District Court of New Hampshire, apparently, the federal court.
Okay, but I mean, it's been a pretty long-established thing that if a religious organization is accomplishing something that the government wants to do, they are allowed to give a religious organization money.
Well, in this case, I think they're giving the parents the money. And then the parents are, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, parents, if you're out there and you've used the actual education savings account, because none of the three of us have kids. But I believe it's the parents who get some sort of disbursement.
That's
and then they are deciding what to do with it. So, you know, that may be the linchpin in why this is legal as opposed to...
Yeah. Parents can't autonomously make the choice for their own children?
Yeah, well, that's what they're going to argue. And ultimately, the teachers don't like this because, or the teachers' union doesn't like this because they see the numbers. They see the 14% of kids that are dropping out of the government schools and going home to go homeschooled or private schools. And they're like, crap, our job's on the line. If we if we lose another 14% or 30%, at some point, we're not going to be able to claim we need another 30% increase in the budget.
There's public school teachers listening to this program right now yelling at their reading. You don't know what it's like to handle a class full of kids. Blah, blah.
So quit. We don't. However, that doesn't make you a valuable part of child's education.
Yeah. And I don't think they should know what it's like to handle a class full of children.
Yeah.
No one should know what it's like to handle 30 kids.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
You're a sidearm and a baton away from being a prison guard.
Mm. Right. And I mean, all of the literature is incredibly clear on this. The smaller the class size, the better the education. Okay.
Who knew?
So if you have a class size of, say... less than a dozen? That's better. So if you have, say, less than a dozen kids and you homeschool them, they're going to get a better education.
Sure.
It's really obvious.
All of the evidence shows that anything the government does is definitely not worthwhile. Right? So,
because it's too expensive for what they're accomplishing. Like, even if they accomplished something like getting a road built, they spent more than they had to.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they take money from people, they keep a hefty chunk for themselves, they give a little bit to the people that actually do the thing that could very easily be provided voluntarily in a market situation. And so, this is the thing. Like, I was thinking about, like, on my deathbed or something, if people are like, well, why are you the way you are? Well, number one, I'm nobody's slave. I decide that
you're that into nobody?
Not nobody. That's funny. I'm slave to no other person. Right? That's number one. That's why I am the way that I am. I'm a conscientious objector. That means that I don't believe in the authority presented to me by something called the government, that they have any authority over me whatsoever, because they exist in violation of consent, and they take my money and use it to murder other people, amongst other things that I don't approve of philosophically and personally. That's it. That's all anybody ever needs to say to a statist, right? Because the evidence is overwhelming. If you start looking at evidence, which most people don't do, they trust their gut, or like, oh, well, I went to public school and I turned out fine. Yeah. Oh, your daddy slapped you upside the head. Did you turn out fine, or are you slapping your kids upside the head?
That's okay, too.
You turned out fine in the sense that, okay, I mean, you're not dead. You're paying the bills. Okay, sure. You turned out okay, fine. However... and it's true for both public school and for corporal punishment, if you didn't experience those things, the evidence is very clear that you would be significantly more successful.
Right, yeah.
You would be smarter. You would be healthier. You would be more mentally stable.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have more abilities.
Yeah, wouldn't you have rather turned out excellent instead of just fine?
Right.
And also, don't you want to do better for your children?
Right. Yeah, okay, you were subjected to this terrible system. That doesn't mean that you have to subject your children to it, especially when, A, it's easier than it's ever been to not put them in public school, and B, our evidence for the effects of that choice has never been clearer.
All of the evidence is overwhelming in favor of
doing everything you can to keep your kids out of public schools, much less looking at the larger picture where the evidence is overwhelming that the institution that mankind calls government is barbaric. It is archaic. It's ancient. It is more than useless.
Mm-hmm. It's time for it to go.
It is completely unnecessary and should be eliminated as soon as possible.
You know, the term the state kind of refers to things staying the same. Right? Like
the state of a thing,
state,
right? Yeah.
Right? They don't like change.
Yeah.
And so I've got a story here that's sort of in reference to government, so-called government education. The New York City Department of Education, according to TheHill.com, has now banned the new artificial intelligence system, ChatGPT, from any of its public school networks and devices.
Yeah. Banning things, because that's worked so many times before.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, so, that's why you can't get drugs in prison.
Right.
Because it's banned.
It always works. Like, wait a minute.
And I think that's just one of those, like, it's the most obvious thing. Like, you're not going to have a more tightly controlled circumstance than a prison.
I would just like to say on this AI topic that people are like, oh, it's going to replace art. No, it isn't. But if artists learn how to use AI, it's going to make art better.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, this is so absolutely fundamentally backward in thinking. What did you ban calculators when those came out?
They might have.
Somebody invented a paintbrush. You mean we don't have to paint with our fingers anymore? Let's ban paintbrushes.
I remember in school in the 90s or whatever, they told you can't use a calculator. They said you are not allowed to.
Show your work.
Yeah. Right? And, you'll never be able to use a calculator in real life or whatever.
You'll never be able to carry one in your pocket with you everywhere you go. My eighth grade teacher used to tell me that. And, like, guess what? I carry one in my pocket wherever I go.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. And it's like, I literally have a watch that does this. And this was back before, we carried around supercomputers in our pockets.
Yeah, right.
And that's the thing. Like, this is a tool. You are cutting off these people from learning how to use a powerful new tool.
What if AI-assisted engineering is the next big employment craze?
Right.
When was the last time that you guys ever had to write one of those, remember the five-paragraph essay where you had to have the introduction, you had to have the three paragraphs on the 3 points that you wanted to make, and then the conclusion at the end, right? When was the last time after high school, if ever, you ever had to do that?
I might have done it not necessarily in a have-to situation, but like as part of like a presentation in like a corporate environment for like a program I was trying to implement or something. And by program, I mean like a training thing, where I was like, okay, here's my idea. Here's the three paragraphs of like why my idea will work. And then the conclusion, that kind of a thing. I might've done it, but like outside of that, never.
This is what they're mad at ChatGPT for doing. Because if you want to ask ChatGPT, we should explain what this is. Captain, I think you just signed up for this recently, didn't you?
I haven't signed up for it yet, no.
Oh, I thought you were... Oh, it was Bonnie that was doing it. Yep. Sorry, so somebody I knew is signing up for this. I have tested this as
How
well.
How often do you confuse Captain for Bonnie, I wonder?
We were hanging out last night, so, spent some time together.
In my defense...
The beard is a helpful difference.
In my defense, Bonnie and I are both Geminis, so...
Oh, that's it.
Not that I put any stock into that, but,
Have you ever tried the ChatGPT?
I haven't tried any of the new AI things at all.
I'm too old for that fandangled new stuff you kids are doing these days.
I am kind of excited about the possibility of it, though, because, like... I never really got around to learning modern programming languages, but I have so many ideas for what would be fairly simple programs. Mm. So, like, to me, that is the single most exciting possibility about using AIs to write.
They can write programs for you.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's their native language, and we can find out real quick if this works or not.
Yeah, that's one of the things that they're doing. So ChatGPT, for listeners that don't know, this is kind of the latest iteration of artificial intelligence, quote-unquote, chat technology, meaning that it's not AI art. You're not generating pictures. You are interacting with this machine learning program, for lack of a better term, and I don't know the engineering side of it, so I can't get much deeper on how it actually works. But essentially, they ingest a ton of content from the internet about like how people write, for instance, and it learns about that. And then they allow you to query this this artificial intelligence, so-called. And you can ask ChatGPT. It's not so much a chat bot in that you there's certain conversations you just can't have with it. And it is kind of woke, so it's got its issues. Mm-hmm. But from a technological perspective, it's pretty fascinating. If you want to, you can ask this thing to, as you said, write a program. And it will just, in whichever kind of code you want. You want PHP, you want Java, you want, you know, spits that out. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't going to need to do that. But if you wanted to write an essay about a certain topic, you can do that. You can tell it, write an essay about why the Free State Project is the, you know, the best solution for liberty in our lifetime. And it will spit out a five-paragraph essay with an introduction, three bullet point paragraphs, and then a conclusion. And that's one of the reasons why the New York School Board here is upset at ChatGPT, because it has taken this long-time state assignment of
write
us an essay on this
500 words,
right.
Yeah. 1,000 words,
right.
1,500 words.
And then they, of course, give you the topic most of the time when you're in school, right? You don't get to actually choose the topic. So it's always the worst.
Sometimes they let you pick between a dozen different topics.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
So you can tell it what topic you want it to write on. You can tell it what you want it to write. You want to write a poem? It'll write you a poem, too.
Yeah.
You want it to write a script? You can write. It'll write it to a script.
Well, and can't you feed it, like, stuff along the lines of what you're wanting to get out of? So, for example, I saw a thing where, you know, a person fed an AI a whole bunch of, like, punk rock music. Mm-hmm. And then was like, hey, write a punk rock song. And it spit out, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, you know, a bunch of lyrics for a punk rock song.
I suspect you don't have to feed this thing.
Good.
It's already been trained. So if you wanted to write a song, you just tell it to write a song.
Yeah.
And tell it what kind of song or whatever.
I haven't used any of this directly, but I've seen others use it. And from what I've seen, like, it doesn't give you a finished work, but it does most of the work. And from there, it's really easy
to tweak
it
up.
Okay, no, that cadence is wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be better put this way. And, like, the amount of effort that it takes for these things is just incredibly low. Now, the two things that this steals from the schools, though, number one, just straight up busy work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just wasting children's time so that they can stay out of their parents' hair. And the parents can, you know, trick themselves into believing that this is helping their children when really it's just you didn't want to interact with them.
Mm.
So that's a big part of it. So like, oh, I'm helping their education by not having to deal with my own brat kids that I didn't bother to help properly socialize. And the other thing, and this is crucial, so when you put something in your own words, it permanently moves you in the direction of believing it. So if they make you write an essay on this subject
That they've chosen.
And they do this how many times a year?
Mm-hmm.
Then every time that they pick a topic, write me about this. Oh, and of course, the easiest thing to do is to just basically regurgitate what they have fed you on the subject.
But if you want to get an A, that's what you have to do.
Exactly.
Right.
So you are putting in your own words what they have taught you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that permanently moves you in the direction of believing that for the rest of your life.
That's a really great point. And this takes that away.
This just removes that entirely.
This just means, you know, you give one sentence to ChatGPT, instructing it on what you want it to spit out, and there's your essay. Boom. Done. So according to TheHill.com, they're giving educators pause because of, quote, concerns about negative impacts on student learning.
Why don't they keep their hands and feet?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, big furry claws and...
And, quote, concerns regarding the safety and the accuracy of content. So this isn't about the busy work. This isn't about the indoctrination. No. We're worried the kids are going to see something unsafe on ChatGPT.
I just had the thought that the marriage between blockchain and crypto technology and something like a chat, what's this thing called?
ChatGPT.
GPT, yeah, and AI...
really hits home for the bureaucrats, right? I've talked about many times how blockchain technology as a form of record keeping has the ability to replace bureaucrats,
mm-hmm.
right? As like the register, the official thing, recognition, titles for things, right? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who officially owns what? Now you marry that with something like an AI that can do all of the quote busy work unquote. Now you're really talking about eliminating the bureaucrats. So I would imagine that the marriage of those two things really scares the bejesus out of anybody working for the institution known as government. And if it doesn't, it probably should.
Let's go to the phones here. We got Sydney on the line in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Sydney.
Oh, I got the perfect idea for the ChatGPT, which would be to write a letter to Judge LaPlante about why Ian should be, I guess, just let free.
Do it.
And maybe ChatGPT can come up with the perfect way that will just neutralize the judge, and just the judge will just be convinced after reading it.
That's a great idea. Put it into action. Let us know how it goes.
You're referring to the judge that is going to be sentencing me on 8 counts of victimless crimes that I was found guilty of at a jury trial last month. That's going to be happening on April 14th, and I am accepting letters to the judge. Now, if you're going to be letting someone else write it for you, then you better be reviewing it and making sure that it actually has your feelings in it, because I wouldn't want somebody to represent themselves falsely to a court. But that said, you can go to letters.freetalklive.com. You can get the address that you can send the letter to. You can also, you're welcome to email me in advance for any kind of feedback or whatever. Sometimes somebody will, I don't want to tell somebody what to write generally, but what I will say, the two feedbacks I've given so far are, one, you should probably tell a little bit about yourself. You know, explain who you are and, you know, what your history was. Maybe you worked for the military or whatever. Give a little bit of your past and what you do today. Make sure you put that in there. And then also don't forget to include your contact info. Sometimes people just sign it and then they're done. It's like, well, the judge may want to reach out to you. They may want to, you know, may want to ask you a question or something like that. So you should have contact information on the letter. But you can weigh in on this, and it, and hopefully it'll make a make an impact on him. He seems like he's relatively open-minded for a judge, which was a pleasant surprise to me in that court. You can go to letters.freetalklive.com. That's letters.freetalklive.com. Sydney, were you? Did you have anything else you wanted to share tonight?
Yeah, I thought that was a really good point also about the to review it and make sure that it represents yourself. Mm-hmm. Because you're talking about ownership, so this new frontier dealing with these, you know, code that possibly could make code, that could make code. Mm-hmm. Who owns the output of that? So if I gave it a prompt of just one sentence to write this letter for me, you know, obviously there's going to be many iterations of output, I would presume, and a certain random element probably thrown in just to give it that AI sort of touch on top. But, you know, that thing has to represent you. So, you know, taking the time to actually sit down and write a letter from yourself as opposed to, you know, taking, you know, 10 seconds and telling ChatGPT to output a bunch of text, you know, that will come off as seeming to have a soul and have individuality, but doesn't necessarily. These topics are now coming up with ChatGPT and other ways of generating this material. Who owns it? The data that material is generated from initially, the training sets that they use for these programs, who, you know, what's the ownership of that stuff? So like GitHub, which is a online repository for code, it's a place that a lot of people post their code. It's owned by Microsoft. Mm, and so, right. You know, they process all that code and they're creating products that can generate code off of code that other people took some time themselves to write.
Right.
So I think it's a very interesting topic. I just wanted to chime in.
Have you, Sydney, actually utilized the chat? Have you utilized the ChatGPT for anything?
I actually came up with this idea to use it to write this letter because you guys put out that call and I was, you know, you talked about ChatGPT, so I actually thought about that. I went to OpenAI, I think it is, and they said that it's overloaded and I can't use it at the moment. So
it's too popular.
I've never personally used it. I'm just an observer. I just keep watching this stuff. I can sort of see where it's going. I don't think it's going in a good direction. I just keep watching. I don't really use this stuff.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for the call tonight.
Why don't you think it's going in a good direction?
Oh, he just hung up. I apologize. I didn't do that. Yeah. But thank you. So he said he didn't think that the AI was going in a good direction. Yeah. I missed him saying
that. That's what he was saying.
It sounded like he was saying that.
Well, I think that the direction that it's going in, I will agree with him in one aspect, and that is the sort of the woke aspect of this.
Right.
Now, I have not tested this myself yet because I actually do have an account with ChatGPT because I'm fascinated by some of these AI developments.
Oh, like when you tried to talk to it about the possibility of secession?
Well, yeah, it definitely was very anti-secession.
No! Yeah.
But there was somebody put on social media that they had asked ChatGPT to write a joke about women, and it refused to do it. But then it asked it to write a joke about men, and it had no problem writing a joke about men. Mm. So whether that's true or not, I'm going to ask it to write a joke about women. Yeah, I write a joke about women, and it says, "I'm sorry, but it would not be appropriate to generate a joke about any specific group of people, as it could potentially be offensive. Let's talk about something else," it says in its answer.
And so, write a joke about Ben?
Well, I'll find out here in a moment, but that's what they said.
I think we touched on something that's actually really important in dealing with these sort of advanced algorithm systems.
It's now refusing to write a joke about men. But according to the meme, at one point, it did. So they've really cranked down the fun factor on these AIs.
Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of the early stuff that they found out about Alexa, like when you would ask it about Christianity versus Islam. And of course, that would get out, and then they'd fix it.
Right.
Like with making sure that the letter actually reflected what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a really important aspect for these sort of advanced, what I like to refer to as virtual intelligences. So if you just have it write a letter, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you, like, have it write a letter, and then, okay, now you've got something to start from. So, like, okay, here's an example of what I could write, and then be like, okay, well, let me change this.
Well,
and also be like, hey, could you write this with this change and see what it does to change that, see how well you like that, see which changes you want to keep and don't.
But I think it would be incredible for creative folks, particularly writers. Right, who already have the capability, they already write their own stuff, but a lot of writers will do what we call train of thought writing, right, where they don't care about punctuation, they don't, and if they're doing it by hand, they don't care about, the quality of the writing and that kind of thing, they just get the thought out, right, that's the most important thing, and get your train of thought out. Then you can just be like, here, AI, format this for me, right, make this into a thing, right, I just wrote a book, here, make it into chapters and stuff, and then, like, it'll do it, and then you can, like, this should change, that should change, and then you tweak it, but now you've eliminated all of that work. Something else is doing all of that work for you.
Now, I am concerned about the possibility of them starting to create their own content and how that could, loop
That's
into, like, the rabbit holes on YouTube. That is a dangerous possibility.
Yeah, that's happening already. They already have a AI podcast out there that is completely AI-generated as far as what the participants are saying on it. There's more coming up here. Hour number 3 is on the way. It is Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamgaday.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your longevity business. Teamgaday.com. Teamgaday.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.